Sportsnet 650.
Care about our 650 fantasy pool.
Why would they not care more about their team instead of your team?
That's why we allow them to call in and do the transactions with our fantasy expert.
Hey, I got to play referee, don't I?
That being said, Carson Wentz, is that the best team in Philadelphia? If they win, the record will be the best team in the NFL. Would you anoint them if they win tonight that the Eagles are the top team?
Week 7. I don't anoint squat in week 7. Are you kidding me? Think about how much has changed over the past couple of weeks. The Kansas City Chiefs have lost back-to-back games now. The Broncos don't have an offense suddenly. We've got teams that looked like they were going to be real strong contenders a couple of weeks ago that now can't find their way out of a paper bag. And then you have the opposite. The Patriots couldn't play defense for the first 6 weeks, and last night against what was last year's best offense, they didn't allow any points until the fourth quarter. So, no, it's week 7. There's no anointing. You ask me in a month, and the answers will be completely different. Though, I did have fun on my show to start the week overnight asking people who are the best and worst teams in the NFL, because you're going to get a half dozen answers for both of those categories. Right now, there's 6 teams in the league that have 5 wins. So the Eagles, as you mentioned, tonight can become the first to have 6 wins. But I still don't know that you want to put all your eggs in the basket of a young QB yet. And we'll see how that defense plays. They've been much improved this year. Jim Schwartz essentially coaches a defense to play like bats out of hell. That's always been his calling card, and that's what the Eagles look like. So this is a good test. But, yeah, it's way, way, way too early. I mean, think about the Packers 2 weeks ago. Weren't people talking about them as a potential Super Bowl contender? And now things have changed. The Cardinals just had a fantastic game a week ago. Couldn't stop them on offense, and now they've lost their quarterback and for some reason their run game. So now it's, unfortunately, injuries are the great equalizer, but also in the NFL, any team can beat any other team any given day, and they don't just play on Sunday, you know.
You mentioned the young quarterback. He's going to play a pretty good defense on the other side for Washington. Do you think this is a bit of a chance where we could find out a little bit more about Carson Wentz because he is playing such a good defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in the NFC East, in addition to the actual matchups that you see, like we'll get tonight with the Redskins and the Eagles, you also get this, as D'Angelo Williams calls it, professional hatred, which adds a little spice to these games. So sure, the Redskins are physical. Their cornerback Josh Norman's been banged up. They are missing some key pieces. They've really been decimated by injuries on the defensive side of the ball. But yeah, they're all really good tests. I mean, if you remember, the Eagles started out really well in the first month of his rookie season and then kind of fell off the map. They were the only team in the NFC East that didn't have a 500 record or a winning record last year. So yeah, I think every week for him, every test for him is a good one. He's still pretty young, but I like the fact that he's got weapons. I like the fact that they're aggressive on both sides of the ball, and he looks comfortable, right? He's got guys to throw to: Nelson Agholor, Torrey Smith, Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz. He's getting pretty good protection up front. I think the addition of LeGarrette Blount was fantastic because he is a guy who will bludgeon you to death. Plus, they have they've got some other guys that they can throw in there who might be able to catch out of the backfield. I know Darren Sproles is hurt, but yeah, this is another good gauge to figure out if they can get through the grind middle of the season and if they can take this physical play. And, you know, it's about survive and advance, right? So week to week.
What did the New England Patriots show you last night? Not that we're people, well, a lot of people thought, oh, they lost a couple at home. Maybe they're finally on the decline. Did they just figure it out defensively?
I think they've been working on it, which is something that you knew a Bill Belichick coach team would continue to do. They make adjustments. He tweaks schemes. A couple of weeks ago, they went, let's see, who are they playing? They were playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you could see that there are changes in the secondary. They simplified their coverages. So they ended up having Malcolm Butler almost exclusively on Mike Evans. And then you had Stephon Gilmore on the other side. Now, Gilmore is hurt now. But what they've done is they're communicating better in that defensive backfield. They're kind of sticking with their guys as opposed to swapping back and forth across the field, which makes it complicated. rated. So they've tried to slim it down a little bit. But, yeah, definitely the way that their defensive secondary has played has been really good, a lot better. So last night for them to be able to limit Julio Jones until the end of the game, I mean, it's hard to contain him completely, and for them to not give up any points. I mean, I'm confused by what the Atlanta Falcons were doing. I have no idea why on a, you know, on the goal line situation you're not giving the ball to your best back in Devontae Freeman. They get too cutesy at times, and for whatever reason their offense was going horizontal instead of going vertical, which is dumb when you're that close. And so there's a lot of rumblings about this offense. They've got problems that predated that Patriots game. But yes, to not give up more than 300 yards passing, not even close actually, to the reigning NFL MVP, that's been the key. They get pressure. You know, they'll get pressure up front. They're fairly good at stopping the run, but it's been, you know, it's been the passing game from opposing teams that's really plagued them. In the last two games, they've looked a lot better.
So everything looked like it was on the up and up in Pittsburgh last year. I know they're 5-2 this year, so you can't complain too much, but Martavis Bryant...
Oh, people always complain.
Of course. Martavis Bryant says it seems like he doesn't want to play for the team anymore. He pulled the, oh, I'm going to the doctor and missing team meetings today. What option do the Pittsburgh Steelers have at this point? Because it seems like their secondary receiving option wants to leave town ASAP.
Well, he can want to, and go nowhere. I mean, the team controls his rights, so they don't necessarily have to do anything just because the player wants to. Man alive, there was so much complaining and finger pointing and whining, all of that, like pointing fingers at or blaming other people in the locker room, all kinds of like people over the last couple of weeks. And I think what happens is you get to this point in the season and you see the locker rooms where there's not a great veteran leadership or strong coaching, because people start to get frustrated with losing, and then instead of zipping their mouths, keeping their mouths shut and keeping it in-house in the family, so to speak, they start airing their grievances on social media to the actual media. It just gets to be a mess, and it's even worse than you know, the original situation. When you start talking about it, you just compound it. So I think in the case of Martavis Bryant, first of all, I think he should keep his mouth shut, because the Steelers have already stuck with him through a lot of crap. I mean, he's been suspended. He's missed a bunch of time because he can't stay sober, and he's been given a bunch of opportunities, and now here he is on the field again, and they've stuck with him. They've encouraged him. Big Ben's been like a big brother to him, and here he is complaining. I mean, their best chance to win is to go back to the, as I called it yesterday on my show, the basics, which is Ben, Brown, and Bell. I mean, those are the three guys that give them the best chance to win. But, of course, when you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and everyone knows that, you get the best of what your opponents have to offer on Antonio Brown, which means Martavis Bryant's going to have opportunities. If he would just focus on the game and stop worrying about how much he's getting the ball, how much he's not getting the ball, whether or not he's the focal point of an offense, I mean, eventually he's going to get an opportunity to go be a free agent somewhere else. But for now, if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Mike Tomlin's pretty much into the tough love, if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I just tell him to zip it. Sit down and shut up and wait until your number is called. Because, again, they've stuck with him through all the crap, and now he's going to turn into a baby. I mean, just, I don't, it drives me insane. And there's a lot of diva wide receivers out there, to be sure, but it's amazing how quickly he forgot what that team has done for him, both publicly and behind the scenes.
She is Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. You can hear her show on Sportsnet 650. She's also part owner of my fantasy football team, as we love that discussion. Hey, talk about receivers that do finger pointing.
I might fire the coach and get a new one.
Doug Baldwin, they can do some different things, finger pointing and all that yesterday on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it still works for Seattle somehow. Does that just speak to the uniqueness of what
actually,
Pete Carroll does?
I think Pete Carroll loves that, believe it or not. People think of Pete Carroll as a rah-rah guy, and he is that for sure. I was once in doing an interview with a reporter who was in a Seattle locker room after they had won, and all of a sudden – he gives up the phone and Pete Carroll is on the line. It was the funniest thing ever. And he was like all kinds of excited and happy. And his team had won. I actually think it was like week 16 or 17. It was toward the end of a season 2 years ago. And he is like crowing about his team. And he's like all kinds of happy and thrilled with the win. It was really funny, but he's still a guy that it's my way or the highway. He's still a guy that he controls the chaos himself. He likes the chaos, but it's got to be controlled. So it's funny. People think of him as like maybe a pushover, but that's not him. He is okay with guys being really intense, guys having, you know, different personalities, guys on the sidelines having conversations, and he's all right with that. I mean, he's okay with all the personalities not meshing together. But, yeah, in the case of Doug Baldwin, let's face it, if this was Dez Bryant, there would be a lot more conversation about it. But it's Doug Baldwin, who generally is extremely intelligent, and you heard his apology afterwards. He explained it. Tom Cable's a tough guy. I mean, he's a lifer in the NFL, and he is a tough guy as well. And so I think that intensity, if you consider what happened afterward, how the offense clicked into gear and they started to play a lot better. Now, if they had lost, maybe it would be a bigger deal. But Pete Carroll doesn't mind it because he thinks guys are engaged, they're intense, they're all in. And then they ended up having a fantastic second half, which, of course, makes it a non-story. I mean, it's not great. It's not great to have a player shoving a coach on the sidelines. But let's face it, in a fight, I would take Tom Cable over Doug Baldwin.
Sportsnet 650.